I want to thank Jake and Karen Abelovitz for sponsoring this morning's breakfast and the Torah, which will be studied towards the end of it, as well as the Hakar Satov, which we are all appreciating, should be Le'iloi Nishmas Eliyahu Ben Abba and Leah Bas Avram. You should continue to be able to do many things for our community and the community at large. The topic this morning is about Abraham Lincoln, reciting Kaddish for Abraham Lincoln. And I would like to, there's a couple of introductory remarks. One is that the basic material for this talk is based on a book that is recently published called We Called Him Rabbi Abraham, Lincoln and American Jewry by Gary Philip Zola. And I would really like just to sit here and read you page for page the entire book because it's really extraordinarily interesting. But I will share with you some significant, in my view, some significant aspects of the book that are relevant, I think, to our world view relating to how we see ourselves as citizens of the United States of America, as well as perhaps gaining a newfound appreciation for the role that Abraham Lincoln played in the freedom that you and I, as Jewish Americans, are able to enjoy today. And I mean that specifically as Jewish Americans, not just as Americans, but as Jewish Americans. Now, this apparently is a timely topic. The book was actually reviewed in one of the premier newspapers in Flatbush, New York, the Flatbush Jewish Journal. So the first 2 minutes of this class I have to dedicate to Jeff Grodko, who pointed this out to me. In last week's Flatbush Jewish Journal, they did a little review of it. In this past Shabbos, yesterday's paper, there was a letter to the editor. And the letter to the editor says the following. To the editor. In the front page of last week's edition, there was an article about a recent book on President Abraham Lincoln. The article praised Lincoln, even quoting the author of the book as saying that Lincoln appears in Jewish religious textbooks as a role model for how to be a good Jew. Okay, see where this is going? Such an article would be appropriate in a non-Torah publication. However, in a Torah true publication, like the Flatbush Jewish Journal, it clearly has no place. In fact, while President Lincoln may have done certain nice things, that's my inflection, and we may be able to learn from his life, he in no way represented a role model for how to be a Jew. The article also quotes a quote-unquote rabbi that was a distinguished reformer and gives prominence to his opinions. A Torah newspaper should make it clear that the opinions of reformers have nothing to do with Torah true Judaism. So, yeah, actually, that was one thing that that the Flatbush Jewish Journal probably would have been happy about. I didn't see any pictures of women in the book. What? Right. Okay. So the question is: first of all, is this letter to the editor is it factually correct? Is it true that Lincoln was considered a great role model of Jews by reformist rabbis? So, to that, excuse me. When Abraham Lincoln died in 1865. Excuse me. There was an outpouring of response of mourning throughout the Jewish community. And what is clear is that in 1865, there was even reformist rabbis and so on, there were very many reform shuls that are today reform temples. Thank you. There were very many synagogues that were quote-unquote Reform temples that today stand firmly within Reform Judaism. But in 1865, these were, sort of shades of gray. It was really before a major rift and a major throwing off of mitzvos and the binding nature of halacha. So just to give you a sampling of what some of the responses were at that time. So number one, there was in Louisville, Kentucky, a prominent businessman who got up in his shul. His name was Louis Naftali Dembritzer. And in his eulogy, he said, you often called him Rabbi Abraham, members of the community, as if he were of the seed of Israel. But in truth, you might have called him Abraham, the child of our father Abraham. All right, so maybe Dembritzer was religious, maybe he wasn't religious, but clearly Lincoln's death struck a chord, and a chord within the community, as the community indeed called him Rabbi Abraham. I mean, I don't know if people call our current president, you know, Rabbi Obama or Rabbi Barack, right? But apparently, there was a close filial feeling towards the president of the United States. Similarly, in Mikveh Israel Shul in Philadelphia, which again, ultimately, I do not believe is a Orthodox synagogue today. nevertheless. They put a resolution in the minutes of their board that the synagogue adopted a mourning period of 30 days, and that they were going to drape the sanctuary in black, and that the Bedafka wanted that these resolutions be published and entered into the records of the congregation. Again, I'm not sure if Mikveh, you know, what the status of Mikveh Israel was or is. Isaac Meir Wise, who is, I think, considered the leader or founder of Judaism in the United States of America, at the time wrote, he had a newspaper as well, and he wrote in his eulogy, "Brethren, the lamented Abraham Lincoln believed himself to be bone of our bone and flesh of our flesh. Etzem me'atzamai u'basar mi'psari." That's Adam and Chava. And so, he goes to the extent of saying that Abraham Lincoln considered himself Jewish. So whether you like, Rabbi Isaac Meir Wise or not, he reports that Lincoln himself considered himself close to the Jewish community. Rabbi Isaac Leiser, who was an anti-reformist rabbi, right? So he gets good credentials, I would think, in the FJJ. And Rabbi Isaac Leiser, who was anti-reform, in his eulogy concludes with Hashem Nasan v'Hashem Lokach Yihi Shem Hashem Mevorach, which we hear at funerals very often. And he says, "Let us ask the divine mercy which we all need to purify us. May his spirit rest amongst the blessed." This is the blessing that he's giving to the deceased Abraham Lincoln and to the community as a whole. So the fact that he gave a eulogy for Abraham Lincoln is also significant, and clearly not just a rabbi of the time, but somebody who was who has good street creds with this paper. Similarly, Congregation Sherith Israel, which is the Spanish Portuguese shul in Manhattan, still exists today. They had the rabbi delivered a eulogy, and in fact they said Kaddish as well. Not only, that's certainly what we would call today an Orthodox shul. His soul is remembered into the father of all souls who had given it. This is Rabbi Bernard Illoui, who was another anti-reform rabbi. And this is what he has to say about Abraham Lincoln. He compares him to Yaakov Avinu, who, when he laid his head down on the stone, and he had his dream and he woke up the next morning, and Rabbi Illoui writes, "And may the stone under his head, Abraham Lincoln, make his grave the sacred place where his weary bones rest like in a holy temple. May his memory forever be a blessing." So I think it is not correct to say that Abraham Lincoln was considered somebody who was either close to the Jewish community, had spiritual connections to the Jewish community, just by progressive reformist rabbis. But even within what we would call today the Orthodox, because these are rabbis who were anti-reform, had a significant filial connection, if you will, to Abraham Lincoln. Most interestingly, or most prominently for me, as a student of YU, the founding president of Yeshiva University, Rabbi Dr. Bernard Revel, who was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and certainly, respected for his erudition, and he was there's no question about who he was. And Rabbi Revel writes the following. Rabbi Revel, in 1909, on the centenary of the birth of Abraham Lincoln, this is what Rabbi Dov Revel had to say. These qualities, he talks about all the wonderful qualities of Abraham Lincoln, and he says, these qualities, which are the brightest gems in the diadem of the greatest American, are they not of Jewish origin? If much of the best that is in thought and tendencies of progressive life is due to Jewish inspiration, and if all of the great social reformers of history have drawn their inspiration from the Jewish prophets, if the Bible is the veid mecum of the pilgrim fathers from which they received their strength, their hope, their hopes and their sustenance, Lincoln was the realization of the true spirit of Judaism. So the fact of putting Abraham Lincoln on the front of the Flatbush Jewish Journal, I don't think is such a bad thing, in any case. But certainly what we see is that Abraham Lincoln was revered by the Jewish community across the United States, across the spectrum, as the spectrum was held in 1865. Now the question is, was it appropriate? Is this an appropriate review of Abraham Lincoln? Was he indeed this great lover of the Jewish community? And as I entitled the talk in the bulletin, Abraham Lincoln, anti-Semite, philo-Semite, or Semite? So let's go to the question, let's just jump into it, the question of Abraham Lincoln's relationship with the Jewish community. So, they say some of my best friends were Jews, right? Some of Lincoln's best friends were Jews. And the question is, does that say anything about him? So, for example, his closest friends or associates was a Jewish fellow by the name of Issachar Zachary, and he was a chiropractist, which I think we call today a foot doctor. But apparently he worked on Lincoln in the White House, and apparently Lincoln had significant foot issues, and Lincoln had tremendous hakara sato for him. But his doctor wasn't just his doctor; he was also apparently his spy, or he used. And it's a complicated thing. We're not going to go into it now. It's in the book, which I suggest you read. But he used the services of his foot doctor to go into southern sympathizing areas and sort of glean information and create relationships. And in fact, this Zachary claims that he could have created an interface between Lincoln and some Southerners that could have ended the war early. Okay, whatever it is, the bottom line is that Lincoln had this very close relationship with his chiropractist. There was another fellow by the name of Abraham Jonas. Abraham Jonas was one of the earliest political supporters of Abraham Lincoln. He raised a lot of money for him, and Lincoln called him one of my most valued friends. Okay, but somebody who raises money from you and helps you, it doesn't mean you really like him at all. He's just somebody that you can use for your own purposes. So that doesn't really say anything per se, although it could. This fellow, Jonas, had five sons. Four of his sons ended up fighting for the Confederacy against the Union. And however, they had enough respect for Lincoln that one of his sons leaked to his father that there was an assassination plot. During the war, there was an assassination plot against Lincoln, and Lincoln should take precaution against for the safety of his own life. So Jonas proceeded to share that information with Abraham Lincoln. So you could imagine that if Lincoln had Hakaras HaTov to Abraham Jonas, he might have had Hakaras HaTov to him just as a human being, but perhaps his Jewishness colored Lincoln's vision of how he related to Jews in general. And then, as well,
there were a whole group of abolitionist Jews who were looking for non-Christian avenues to express their views. A lot of the abolitionist activists sort of couched their terms and their activism and their phraseology within the bounds of Christianity. And they were looking for a non-Christological way to advance their abolitionist views. And they looked to hook up with Lincoln and to connect with him and support him in that sense. So there was certainly interconnection between an interface between Abraham Lincoln and individual Jews and Abraham Lincoln and Jews as a whole. Now this all can lead us to a certain conclusion that Abraham Lincoln had a good relationship with individual Jews or maybe the Jewish community as a in general. But this is all one thing or another. There was a fellow by the name of Henry Wentworth, and if you look on the sheets that I gave out. So if you look at the sheet, it's on the first page. I'm sorry, it wasn't photocopied so cleanly. 1, 2, 3, 4. It is the fifth source on the page, Henry Wentworth Monk. And this was Henry Wentworth Monk had a meeting with Abraham Lincoln and soon after the Emancipation Proclamation. And he's talking with Lincoln, and Lincoln says to him, so what do you think of the Emancipation Proclamation? And Wentworth says to him, it does not go far enough. Why not follow the emancipation of the Negro by a still more urgent step, the emancipation of the Jew? Really? So Abraham Lincoln said, are they not already free? And Wentworth said, there can be no permanent peace in the world until the civilized nations led by Great Britain and the U.S. atone for what they have done to the Jews, meaning Europe, had done to the Jews for 2,000 years of persecution by restoring them to their national home in Palestine. This is in 1865. And making Jerusalem the capital city of a reunified Christendom. We must first bring this dreadful war to a victorious conclusion, responded Abraham Lincoln. Then you will see what leadership America will show the world. So this fellow, Henry Wentworth Monk, who was some type of Christian mystic, he was also what we would call today a Christian Zionist. All these evangelical Christians who have full throttled a support for the state of Israel. Here he is in 1865 calling for for the establishment of an independent state of Israel, basically restoring the Jews to Palestine. And what is more interesting, and the fact that he, as a non-Jew, as a Christian, was interested in this, was what he reports Lincoln's response was. That Lincoln's response was, yeah, that's a great idea. That in fact, that once the war comes to an end, we will indeed show the world American leadership, meaning that we will indeed do that. We will engage in a return of the Jewish people to the land of Israel. Not to expel them from America, because he wanted them out, but as a source of penitence, actually, of restoring and fixing an evil, a historic wrong. So all this leads us to the point that from Lincoln's social interactions, whether they were with these Jews that we mentioned, with his chiropractors, with Abraham Jonas, with Jews who were interested in the abolitionist movement, or as reported by his meeting with Henry Wentworth Monk, that Lincoln clearly seemed to have a soft spot in his heart for the Jewish people. Okay, so that sort of goes to the question of some of my best friends are Jewish. But, again, some of my best friends are Jewish doesn't necessarily tell us anything, although I think this does tell us something. So if you want to know about Lincoln's relations with the Jewish community, you have to look at a few important test cases. So the first thing that you would want to see, maybe some of the policies that he put in place, or the decisions that he took, or the pronouncements that he made. And that might tell you more, or at least equally as much, as what people report about him. So the first thing we'll look at is the movement in the beginning in 1861 to Christianize the United States of America. And, you know, some of the things that we'll see here this morning, it's like, you know, you could really take it out of the papers today. So in 1861, there was a movement of Presbyterians, a group of Presbyterians, and a particular group known as the Covenanters, and they were a Christian denomination that split off from the Presbyterians. And the Presbyterians, of course, were in the news just this week for taking a vote to boycott the state of Israel for things that are produced in the territories. And in 1861, this group felt that America had lost its Christian footing. And therefore, they put together a platform that they wanted to pass an amendment in the Constitution that would declare, in essence, the basic principles, affirming that the United States of America would be a Christian country. So, so we're all familiar with the NRA, which is the National Rifle Association. Okay, but before the NRA was the National Rifle Association, the NRA was the National Reform Association. In 1864, was this group of Covenanters and other Presbyterians and Christians that got together to form this pro-Christian America outlook. And in the first source on your page, you have here their basic platform, which was to maintain Christian in American government, touching the Sabbath, the institutions of the family, the religious element in education, the oath and public morality as affected by the liquor traffic, and to secure such an amendment of the Constitution as will declare the nation's allegiance to Jesus and its acceptance of the moral laws of the Christian religion, and to indicate that this is a Christian nation and place all the Christian laws, institutions, and usages of our government on an undeniable legal basis in fundamental law of the land. So this is what they wanted. Now, they secured a meeting with President Abraham Lincoln, and Lincoln first said to them, very interesting, I'm going to have to, you know, take it up by committee. You know, we don't want to pass an amendment in the Constitution too quickly. And according to the commenters, take a look at the next source here. They're addressed to the president. They say the following, and this is the minutes of their meeting. Several of your predecessors refused to appoint days of national fasting and thanksgiving. For the same reason, while you, within the space of a year, called us either to national fasting, humiliation, or prayer for our many grievous sins. They saw in Lincoln a co-traveler, a fellow traveler, especially our sin of forgetting God or to our national thanksgiving of his unspeakable kindness. We ask, so they saw in him that, you know, a compatriot over here. Somebody who would, like to see the United States of America as a Christian nation. Now, that doesn't necessarily make Abraham Lincoln, you know, an anti-Semite. But it does, you know, speak to a certain narrowness of his worldview. We ask, and just, you know, listen to, you know, sort of how people don't really see themselves. We ask for no union of church and state. No, they don't want that. They don't want to separate, they want a separation of church and state. Everybody should be free. We represent no sectarian or denominational object. We just want one little itty-bitty thing. But the only thing we want is, the only thing that we represent is one, in a country in which all who bear the Christian name can cordially agree. Right? So they want freedom for all Christians. Right? There should be no separation of church and state. You can be Presbyterian or Baptist or Lutheran or whatever. But, you know, so that's a certain worldview as well. So they saw in Lincoln a fellow traveler. Now, John Alexander, who was a leader of this group, reported later on that they were told that Lincoln was all for this. That Lincoln had Lincoln lived, you know, he would have gone forward with this. So again, this seems to indicate maybe that Lincoln was not necessarily an anti-Semite, but a narrowness of a worldview in which there was really a freedom for all. And And just to read for you a line here, the president told an unnamed NRA member in confidence that he hoped a Christian amendment would pass during his second administration. And this is a quote from Alexander. Therefore, we believe, this is the quote, that if Lincoln had lived, he would have recommended the amendment of the Constitution, making it Christian. So that's a pretty powerful, you know, I would say, indictment of Lincoln. Now, you know, should Rabbi Revel have gone to the bat and said that that Lincoln represents everything that is good in Judaism, a man who had sympathies for a constitution that was going to create a Christian state? So the answer is that we don't really know if this report is true. I mean, this is, you know, people that are it's a self-serving statement of the NRA members to say that Lincoln told, you know, one of our leaders that he was in support of it. And even if he said it, he didn't act on it. So, you know, number one, he didn't act on it. Number two is, you know, the source of this is not a truly impartial source. So, having said that, the move to Christianize, you know, America does not seem to be a good place to show that Lincoln was was anti-Jewish, and it might even be a good place to show that he was pro the rights of Jews in America, because of the fact that you know, he certainly did not act swiftly on this if he ever intended to act on it alone. Okay, so that's test case number one. Test case number two. Test case. So we see number one, we see his social relationships, you know, indicate that he, you know, certainly had good relations with individual Jews and possibly with a broader Jewish community. You know, some of my best friends are Jews. In terms of his policies, so the question of his of making the United States into a Christian country would not indicate that he was. You know, interested in limiting the Jewish rights in America, for there is no indication other than this self-aggrandizing, you know, reports of members of the NRA. So let's take a look at another area, and that is the fact that in 1861, it became clear to President Lincoln that he needed to raise a lot of soldiers for an army. And so he called for all the states to raise volunteer armies. And there was a bill that was put through, I guess, the Congress, called the Volunteer Bill. And Section 9 or 8 of this Volunteer Bill required that there be chaplains, you know, associated with each one of these armies, right? The army requires a chaplain. However, the way this bill was worded was that the chaplains had to be of any recognized Christian faith. So basically, it excluded Jews from being chaplains in the U.S. Army. Now, this immediately, there was a colonel by the name of Max Friedman, a Jewish fellow, who was associated with the 5th Pennsylvania Cavalry, and he decided to appoint a Jewish chaplain by the name of Michael Allen. Now, when it became clear that Michael Allen was in violation of the law, he was forced to resign. He wasn't fired, but he basically resigned. And Friedman did not want to take this sitting down. And in fact, the equivalent of the ADL in the early 1860s, which was the Board of Delegates of the Jewish Community, which was a loose organization of various Jewish, really, shuls and newspaper leaders and rabbis and whatever it was. It was you can call it the ADL, or the Conference of Presidents of Major Jewish Organizations, of which there were really no major Jewish organizations in those days. But the fact is, you know, this sort of like representative of the Jewish community. Now, they went to President Lincoln. They published, newspaper articles, and they lobbied up President Lincoln. And they appointed a fellow by the name of Reverend Arnold Fischel, who was the shamus in the Spanish-Portuguese shul. He was coming to the end of his contract, so he needed something to do, apparently. So they appointed him to go to Washington, D.C., and he was going to lobby the president. And he submitted a formal request to be a U.S. Army chaplain to sort of test the waters. He was denied. And the Jewish community was indeed up in arms about this. In fact, this was not even a restriction in the Confederate Army. In the Confederate Army, there was no restriction against Jews being chaplains. In the Union Army, the land of the free, the home of the brave, you had Jews were excluded from being chaplains. Fishel went to Washington, D.C. To lobby Lincoln. Lincoln apparently agreed with Fishel. And if you take a look at source number three, source number three. Lincoln's letter to Reverend Arnold Fisher. I find that there are several particulars in which the present law in regard to the chaplaincy is deficient. I shall try to have a new law broad enough to cover what is desired by you on behalf of the Israelites. And very soon after, Lincoln started working the levers of Congress to pass this bill, as opposed to the Covenanters, which we see no action that was taken. Over here, action was immediately began to be taken. Now, this did not go unopposed. Take a look at the next source, the Presbyter, our happy Presbyterian friends, right? In 1862, the editor of the Presbyter wrote regarding the proposed amendment, which would clarify that Jews could be chaplains in the army. So the editor of the Presbyter writes, Jews regard Jesus of Nazareth as an imposter, deceiver, and one worthy of every reproach. Now that may or may not be true, but it's really beside the point when it comes to freedom in the United States of America. Right? Should this bill become law, he writes, the government would in effect say that one might despise and reject the Savior of men and yet be a minister fit minister of religion. In other words, he was arguing that that a Jewish chaplain is not a fit minister of religion because Judaism, in essence, is not a fit religion. Okay, so how did Lincoln, Lincoln could have taken this view also. He didn't have to say it in those words. He could have tabled it. You know, he could have done a lot of things. But he ensured that this, went through Congress. And Lincoln's letter, that's source number three, Lincoln actually ensured that this would be overturned. And indeed, it was overturned. Now, at the end of the day, this Reverend Fisher was not able to see this through to the end. Apparently, the Board of Delegates ran out of money or didn't feel that they could continue paying him for this job. And so he went home to Holland, where he was originally from. And although he was the test case to become a Jewish chaplain, he actually never stayed. He was never the beneficiary of this of the appointment per se. So Fishel himself was denied. He ran out of money. He went back home to England. But a Jewish the law was passed, and a Jewish chaplain by the name of Frankel became the first Jewish chaplain. Another name that's recently in the news. Right, Frankel, the Jewish community was appropriately represented in the U.S. Army. So if you look at Lincoln's friends, if you look at how he dealt with the issue of Christianizing America, if you look how he dealt with the issue of excluding Jews as chaplains in the army, it would seem to indicate that he had a rather positive feeling, if not towards Jews, but at least towards minorities. All right, so I mean, you can't say that he loved Jews, but maybe he was just a fair-minded person, and he believed that all minorities should, be free in the United States of America. You know, Jews or non-Jew alike. Okay, but certainly what you cannot say is that Lincoln was an anti-Semite. So, is there any indication Lincoln had any negative feelings towards the Jewish community? So, aside from that Covenanter, from the Covenanter's report of how he looked at Christianizing America, there is one other possible thing to cite. And again, this is all in the book. And that is that Lincoln wrote a letter to the Secretary of War. And he writes, this is not in your sheets. And he writes, my dear sir, about Jews, that's how he starts off. That can never be good, right? About Jews, I wish you would give Dr. Zachary, that's his podiatrist, a pass to go to Savannah, right, in the South, remain a week in return, bringing with him, if he wishes, his father and sisters and any of them. This will spare me trouble and oblige me. I promised him long ago that he should be allowed this whenever Savannah should fall into our hands. So In other words, why does he, and then he has one other thing here, regarding another Jewish guy. Blumenberg at Baltimore, I think he should have a hearing. He has suffered for us and served us well. Had the rope around his neck for being a friend. He raised troops, fought, and was wounded. He should not be dismissed in a way that disgraces and ruins him without a hearing. So, you know, so what he's actually talking about are some nice things, but, you know, just sort of starting, you know, about Jews, like, sort of a, as a class of people, like, really, you know, Jews, you know, maybe Jews in general don't deserve this kind of, you know, good feeling or good actions, but these two guys, you know, they're exceptions to the rule. You know, this can go either way, but I don't think it's a very strong, I don't think, if that's the best you can do to show that Lincoln, you know, had some type of, you know, racist or, you know, anti-Semitic views, you know, I would let that one slide, you know. And people have said a lot worse. And a lot more difficult to things that you know, somehow are friends of the Jewish people. Okay. However, there are two other things that we can look. There's one other main thing that we should look at in terms of his policies, and that is if you look on the bottom of your page. So here, General Ulysses S. Grant. Did something which I think most of us would find to be shocking. And that is that, you know, in most Western European countries, civilized countries, they all have a history of expelling Jews. England, France, you know, we don't have to talk about Germany, Spain, right? You know, they have a long pedigree. And I think that if you ask most Jews in America today, you know, how does the United States distinguish itself in the history of the Jewish people? We've never had an instance where Jews were expelled from the United States of America. And that is not entirely correct. And that would not necessarily even be the history of the history of the minds of most people today were it not for the following situation. Ulysses S. Grant, in the middle of the war, was rather perturbed by profiteering that was going on in southern occupied United States, in the occupied territories. Okay, so and he was so upset with this that he issued the following military order. Right, the Jews, as a class, right, not a particular Jew. The Jews, as a class, violating every regulation of trade established by the Treasury Department and also department orders, are hereby expelled from the department, it says here of Tennessee, but I think it doesn't mean Tennessee, it means Tennessee, Mississippi, Kentucky, a few states that were under his jurisdiction. Within 24 hours of the receipt of this order, they had to leave. Post commanders will see to it that all of this class of people be furnished passes and required to leave, and anyone returning after such notification will be arrested and held in confinement until an opportunity occurs for sending them out as prisoners, unless furnished with permit from headquarters. I mean, you can see this happening in Nazi Germany. You can see this happening in, you know, August of 1492. You can see this happening in Russia and the Pale of Settlement in the 18th and 19th centuries. But in the United States of America, that there should be an order expelling Jews from a territory of land on pain of imprisonment? That's unheard of. And he continues that no passes will be given these people to headquarters for the purposes of making personal applications of trade permits by the order of Major General Ulysses S. Grant, right? So if you want to go say Tehillim at his tomb on 100th Street in Manhattan, you might want to think twice, okay? So what happened? So how, first of all, why did he do this? Why did he do this? So there's a machlokas historians why he took this action to begin with. So some suggest that he was, I was just following orders. Some superiors ordered him to do this, and whatever their reasons were, their reasons were. Okay. All right, not sure exactly who his superiors were. He was really reporting up to Lincoln. So if you want to, if you want to say it was his superiors, you're going to have to find something that that Abraham Lincoln did that would suggest that he was in favor of this. Okay, some suggest that it was really something much more. It wasn't anti-Semitism. Actually, it was classical anti-Semitism. It was finding somebody, a Jew who did something wrong, or a group of Jews who did something wrong, therefore saying that all Jews do this wrong thing, right? You know, this Jew defrauded investors by $40 billion. So that means that all Jews are dishonest businessmen, right? That's classical anti-Semitism. And so during this period of the war, there was a lot of illegal profiteering and black market stuff going on, because the United States still needed raw material from the South in order to bring it up north in order to make into finished products. And as you would imagine, like other people, there were Jews involved with in this trade as well. And so therefore, you know, he sort of had it up to here with this, with this profiteering. And so, you know, he made a gzar din. But his gzar din is classical anti-Semitism. You know, get rid of all the Jews. Right, so that's the second. There's a third approach, which is even more damning in a certain way, but less damning in terms of his anti-Semitism. And that is that there were a lot of military personnel who, you know, you had to get permission from the U.S. Military in order to go into occupied South in order to engage in these business dealings. And so if you couldn't get it, so then you would end up maybe bribing military personnel. There was a lot of corruption in the U.S. Army, or significant enough corruption in the U.S. military, that Grant wanted that there were military personnel who saw a great financial opportunity here, and they wanted to cut out the middleman. Why should we deal with these Jewish guys who are representing us, right? Because in other words, the only way they got the permit is by quote unquote representing a U.S. military official, and that U.S. military official is now basically in business. So, but he's in business because he has this middleman, this Jewish agent who is helping him out. The only reason that the Jewish agent has him as his representative is because he needed to get the permit to begin with. So there was a sort of a cycle over here. So, but they wanted to cut out the middleman. If I don't have this Jewish guy as my middleman, then I can make all the profit myself. So apparently, some suggest that that Grant was pressured to expel all the Jews in order to preserve this military corruption that was going on. So none of these are really speak well of of Jews who were involved with this, and it certainly doesn't speak well of the military, and it certainly doesn't speak well of Ulysses S. Grant. So what was Lincoln's response? So Lincoln's response, actually, was a disbelief. When Lincoln heard about this, he could not believe that this was the case. But in fact, it was proven to be the case. If you take a look here, if you turn the page, So if you turn the page on the top, the New York Times, January 1863. So the New York Times actually took out an editorial which was condemnatory of this General Order Number 11. But you have to see, this is the what? So this is, classic New York Times. The first and mildest objection we see is its atrocious disregard for the English composition, right? In other words, General Order Number 11 was bad because it was written in poor English. To be dealt harshly with is bad enough, but to be vilified in execrable English is cruel, if not unusual, punishment. It is mortifying to know that such a jumble of bad writing and worse logic should emanate from the headquarters of a major general commanding the military department of the United States. To condemn any religious body as a class and by wholesale is contrary to common sense and common justice, contrary to republicanism and to Christianity. Okay, so they got to it at the end that it was bad to do this, but the matter is that it doesn't really make a difference what the New York Times felt, whether it was written in good English or bad English, or whether it was moral or not moral, or whether it accorded with Christianity or not. What is, for our purposes, important to know is how Lincoln dealt with it. And so Lincoln actually overturned the order. He overturned the order immediately. Not like the Covenanters. He said, you know, we'll think about it. And they reported that. If he were alive today, he would have gone ahead with an amendment. And not like even, the question of a chaplaincy that he worked it through Congress. In this case, he immediately overturned it. He wrote a letter, gave it to the people who were meeting with him. These two brothers from Kentucky. Their name was the Caskill brothers, and they met with him, and Lincoln gave him a letter to give to the chief general, and he said, by the time you get home, this will not be a problem. It actually took a few days for the order to be overturned, and there were Jews that had to leave their homes, their home and hearth, right? They had to leave. There was one fellow who was was actually put in prison for the night, but that might have just been for tangential reasons of his dealing with the order, not for the order itself. But the fact of the matter is that this act was carried out to some degree. Before it was entirely overturned, and I just want to read to you one thing, which again could come right out of the newspapers today. Okay, this is Rabbi Weiss had a newspaper called The Israelite, and in this he published a column, and he writes here the following. We only have one thing more to say. He writes, condemning this whole issue. And he says, we only have one thing more to say. The Cincinnati newspapers were timely informed of the outrage committed on citizens because they are Jews. In Cincinnati, where Rabbi Weiss lived, thousands of Israelites live and contribute largely to the wealth of the city, to every benevolent and charitable institution, contribute largely to the military funds of various descriptions, and read the said newspapers, for which they pay, advertise, and support otherwise. What do you think these selfsame papers did, learning of the outrageous order of General Grant? Nothing. Nothing in the world. Shame on such press. So it's like, it's 1865, it's 2014, it could be right out of the papers today. I mean, how many newspapers do we see taking a vociferous stand on three boys that are being kidnapped? Meanwhile, every other week there's a condemnation about Israeli aggression towards or overreaction towards Palestinians and whatever. So but the fact is that that Lincoln indeed overturned the order, and he overturned it expeditiously, and that perhaps says more. Now, he didn't do it without opposition. In fact, there was a debate in Congress whether this, they're going to pass an amendment in Congress condemning this, condemning Grant's general order. And this again is from a column that Rabbi Weiss wrote, and he writes that this is the discussion that went on in Congress, resolved that there was a resolution to condemn, that the said order deserves the sternest condemnation of the House and the President of the United States as Commander-in-Chief of Army and Navy. Mr. Pendleton moved the previous question of the passage of the proposal. Mr. Washburn moved that it be laid upon the table, and this was agreed to 56 to 53. So they tabled it in Congress to condemn General Grant's order. Now listen to this. On motion of Mr. Washburn to table it, this is Rabbi Weiss writing, the everlasting Mr. Washburn, the resolution was tabled by a vote of 56 to 53. If the Hebrew citizens of the United States were gentlemen of color, Mr. Washburn would certainly have made a brilliant effort to vindicate their rights and expose a general who committed a gross outrage on them. But being only white men, it would not pay party legislation. That is all we have to expect of this Congress. Mr. Pendleton said of Washburn's motive was that of friendship for Grant, to whom Congress he had several times taken upon himself, but Republicans openly say it is a rule of the House to vote down everything coming from the other side. So, just take the issue, put in some contemporary issue, and this could be pretty much take a few words and massage them here and there, and you have something from 2014. So Lincoln acted actually against what was, if not a majority view in support, but certainly a majority did not want to condemn Grant. And he overturned General Grant, which was his top military official. He owed a lot to Grant, militarily speaking. He appointed him. He trusted his military acumen, and perhaps rightly so, aside for the drinking. But but the fact is that Lincoln operated in a way which changed and solidified the history of the United States as a place where Jews could operate freely as free men and women. And I would argue that had Lincoln not done this, the next 100, 200 years of Jewish history from 1865 to 2014 would look entirely different. Entirely different. A precedent would have been set that Jews are just, could be expelled from here, from there, they're second-class citizens. And Lincoln stopped it in its tracks. The point of the matter is that when it comes to democracy, and you see this in the Middle East today, when it comes to democracy, democracy is only as good as the people who practice it. And, you could clearly see a United States of America, which everybody would have been, happy, except there would have been, second-class citizens. And it would not have gone against the internal grain of what liberal democracy is, because that's what people would have been, that's the frame of mind that people would, would operate and look at the world through. Lincoln changed that for Jews forevermore, or at least hopefully forevermore. And as a result, the United States of America has a liberal democracy, not just for people in general, but for Jews in particular. And when we have a history in this country of a strong sense of right, not just for minorities, but for Jews in particular. And to that, we owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to President Abraham Lincoln. And it is right that Jews across the spectrum in 1865 mourned his passing. They had good reason to mourn his passing. So the fact is that some congregations, even Orthodox ones, like Sheirith Israel, said Kaddish for Lincoln. So we come to the conclusion here. The question is it right? Was it right for, we're a halachic institution here, was it right for to recite Kaddish for Abraham Lincoln, who was a guy? And the answer is, we have to split that up into two things. We're coming to the end of our time, so I'm going to wrap this up within 5 minutes. So the, sort of spiritually speaking, forget halacha per se, just sort of morally, spiritually, would you want to say Kaddish for Lincoln? And I think the answer is, even if it was halachically prohibited, you would want to do it. You would want to have some type of hakara sato, do something, le'iloi nishmaso. Because what he did affects every single Jew in the United States up until and including today, and including the person who wrote that letter to the editor at the Flatbush Jewish Journal. But there's another aspect, and that is the halachic aspect. Okay, so let's take a look at both of these very, very briefly. On the spiritual side of the house, is it appropriate to do it? Well, if he was a Gentile, then you have a Shiloh. If he was a Jew, you have no Shiloh. So the question is, was Abraham Lincoln a Jew? So this is an interesting question. Abraham Lincoln was the only president in the United States history until that time, I don't know about subsequent, who never declared his religion. He was not a churchgoer. And in fact, when President Lincoln was asked about his, about going to church and about his religious affiliation, he said the following: "I have never united myself to any church because I have found difficulty in giving my assent without mental reservation to the long, complicated statements of Christian doctrine which characterize their articles of belief and confession of faith. When any church will inscribe over its altar its sole qualification for membership, 'Thou shalt love thy Lord thy God with all thy heart and with all thy soul and with all thy mind,' love thy neighbor as thyself, that church I will join with all my heart and soul." So, now, Abraham Lincoln came from the town of Lincoln. His ancestors came from the town or the city or town or parish of Lincoln in England. His great grandfather. Now, there are many people, you know, who are named Abraham who are not Jewish. There are less people that are named Mordechai who are not Jewish, at least in today. You know, maybe people used more biblical names in the old days, in the olden days. But his great grandfather was Mordechai Lincoln. From Lincoln, England, and that community was founded in 1159, and there was a community of Jews there. There was a crusade sometime between 1159 and 1250, and the Jews of Lincoln were protected by the priest, by the parish, you know, chief, and in fact, when that priest died, the members of the Jewish community mourned his passing. In 1255, there was another, there was a blood libel, and then in 1259, the Jews were expelled. So the likelihood that Lincoln was Jewish is maybe less so, but you know, we have the phenomenon of crypto Jews in Spain after the Spanish Jews were expelled in 1492 and beforehand of Jews who became Moranos. So who knows? Maybe great grandfather Mordechai Lincoln was a Jew, and he comes from crypto Jews, from the English equivalent of Morano Jews. Rabbi Weiss wrote in his eulogy that Lincoln told him b'peh mele, straight out, that he is of the Jewish faith. He wrote, he supposed himself to be descendant of Hebrew parentage. He said so in my presence. Now, the historian Isaac Markins spoke with Lincoln's son, and Lincoln's son said, you know, lahaya v'lo nivra, it's not true, and it was just a nice pleasantry. But Isaac Mayer Weiss thought that it was that he was being serious, and he was there at the conversation, and Robert Lincoln was not. So who knows? Maybe Lincoln actually was of Jewish descent. And most interestingly, when asked about his religion, he would often say that my religion is the 20th chapter of Exodus, Perek Chaf Sefer Shmos, which is the Ten Commandments. He could have said, you know, a chapter in Matthew, a chapter in Luke, this to that, the other thing, any one of the Gospels, but he chose, you know, he chose the Aseres Hadibros, which is a Jewish source. So the fact that he his origins are somewhat obscure, the fact that he never associated with any church, the fact that he when he proclaimed whatever religious convictions he had, he went to the Torah and not to Christian scriptures, you know, all leads to the grand conspiracy theory, if you will, maybe it's not a conspiracy theory, maybe it's a real theory, that he was in fact of Jewish origin. So if Lincoln was a Jew, there's no shyly, you could say Kaddish for a Jew, right? You say Kaddish for all types of Jews. Certainly a Jew who did good things for you, even if he's not religious, right? You say a person can say Kaddish. But what if this is just really just all, you know, fun and games, and it's not really true? And Lincoln was indeed a Gentile. So if you look on the back page over here, this is a tshuva from Rav Ovadia Yosef. Rav Ovadia Yosef was asked. Now we come to the Torah portion of our day, so we can at least say Kaddish at the end. Rav Ovadia Yosef was asked the question. He was asked, if a person is a convert, can he make a mishaberech for his ailing parent who is ill? If a person is a convert, can he say Kaddish for his Gentile parent after his Gentile parent dies? And Rav Ovadia Yosef cites here the Sefer Chassidim. Sefer Chassidim is early medieval 12th century, I think, or 13th century work in Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid. And Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid writes in the Sefer Chassidim, this is not related to Belzer Babov. This is entirely different Chassidim, all right? Not related to the Chassidim of today. So Sefer Chassidim writes, Shenachui she'asa tovos liYisrael, a Gentile who does good things for the Jewish people, Yicholim levakesh mehakadosh baruch hu, you can beseech God on his behalf, and you can even beseech God's beneficence for a heretic Jew, somebody who's a mummer. This is a long, a relatively long piece. I'm just giving you an excerpt from it. He says, "Uvenidon didan." Rav Ovadia Yosef says, "In our situation, in our case that you asked me the question, ein lecha tova gedola mizu. What greater deed could a person do than bringing you into the world?"
And so therefore, certainly, and to pray for his soul, that it, that the judgment on his soul should be lightened, that's what Kaddish is in a certain sense, then, you're redounding zechuyos to the niftar. You certainly can do that for the person who is a convert to Judaism, to say Kaddish for the deceased parent. Kadesh Yiskel Chayolam Abba, because if it were not for him, this person would never have even had the opportunity for eternal life for Olam Abba. Ubevadai Ra'ui V'Nachon Shiyomar Alav Kaddish. Kaddish. Not only is it okay to do, he says it's appropriate for a convert to say Kaddish for the deceased deceased Gentile parent. I don't know if that's commonly done, but that's his view. V'Heinatar Isi, and then he quotes Zakan Aaron of Aaron Walken, who says Shirashai Lomer Kaddish Le'iloi Nishmas Aviv Hanachu? You can certainly say Kaddish for a Gentile parent. Elashein Chiyuv B'Davar. It's not obligated. And he says that Veshuv Dan Lomer. The reason that it's maybe you shouldn't do it is people will get all confused saying Kaddish for Jews, for Gentiles. It's just not good policy. However, Vavadi Yosef says that in our day and age, Nira Libar, it seems to me She'ein Liminoa Me'ager. You shouldn't prevent a convert from saying Kaddish for his Gentile parent. Because today is day and age, you have 30 people saying Kaddish in shul. Who knows who's saying Kaddish for whom? It's not like the way Kaddish was originally established. You had one person saying Kaddish, and then everybody, and that's it. You had that one person saying Kaddish, and that's what fights in shul were about. Who is going to be that one person saying Kaddish? So to get rid of the fights, everybody says Kaddish, right? So today you don't have that. So, nobody knows who's saying what, where. There's no confusion at all. And therefore, Rav Avadya Yosef says, B'sikum, in conclusion, Ger Tzedek, Rishai L'Ispal L'Refu Asaf V'Hanachri B'Cholyo, that a Ger can pray, make a Mishaberach for his, or to daven for his parents' well-being if they're very sick. V'gam Rishai L'Omar Kaddish L'Av L'Achar P'tiraso L'Iloi Nishmaso. That you could say Kaddish for the Gentile parent after the parent has died in order to raise his soul. So it seems to me that the question that we started out with, was it appropriate for these rabbis and their congregations to say memorial services and to say Kaddish for Abraham Lincoln? So if Abraham Lincoln was a Jew, no problem. If Abraham Lincoln was a Gentile, well, you have to ask yourself the question, was he an anti-Semite? I don't think he was. Was he a philo-Semite? Maybe he was. Maybe he was just neutral. But he certainly did good things for the Jewish people. Was he a Semite? Was he Jewish? So, maybe he was Jewish. But what is clear is that whether he was Jewish or he was non-Jewish, we owe a tremendous hakaras hatov to Abraham Lincoln and for the ethos that he set in the United States of America. And we should say Kaddish, maybe I'm not making a halachic pronouncement, but at least morally, we should say Kaddish not only for Abraham Lincoln, but for all those who died in this country to preserve the liberty that we have to write letters to the Flatbush Jewish Journal saying that it's not right to put Abraham Lincoln on its front cover. Because were it not for Abraham Lincoln, we would probably be living, or maybe not probably, but possibly living in a ghetto called Brooklyn, New York. Oh, wait a minute, I think we are living in a ghetto. But it would have been not a self-imposed one. It would have been an imposed ghetto. So I would like to conclude this morning by saying a Rabbanan Kaddish, say Rabbi Hananya ben Akasha, which you can say Kaddish afterwards on that. And as we say Amen Yehi Shmei Rabbah, we're going to say Amen Yehi Shmei Rabbah because we're saying Kaddish for an appropriate reason. But you can also have in mind Abraham Lincoln and all those whose neshamas are resting in heaven that deserve the zchus for all the Torah that is being learned today, all the mitzvahs that are being done today, and the freedom that we have to live as Jewish people in the year 2014-57-74.
animal kol tamid day, some day animal kol madios kim beraisa, divrasa adin di kol asav yasar, yehei lehon ulchon shel Avraham chida b'chita rachmi b'chai en arichim v'zan arichim v'chor chanim chanav v'ndi v'shmai v'im ramein, yehei shalom rav v'shmai v'chem aleinu v'chai shalom v'im ramein, yaseh shalom v'im ramav, hu yaseh shalom aleinu v'al kol Yisrael v'im ramein.
Thank you for coming. Have a good day.
Thank you.
That's awesome.
Yeah.